Dave, when it comes to the world of podcasting, one of essentially just what you're doing is telling stories. You know, it's usually one or two people sitting down, typically friends. Otherwise, it makes for awkward if you're not friends with the person you're talking to. But one of the things that is fun about that is just being able to tell stories, you know? And if you sit down and you think about it, and you're a third generation wrestler who's been around the business of wrestling your entire life, I think it's safe to say you've probably got about a story or two to tell that some people might find entertaining. And hell, we got very lucky this week in the fact that we're talking to a former NWA, AAA, WCW champion. He's one of the founders of TNA. He's a WWE Hall of Famer. He's a King of the Mountain. He's also host of My World with Jeff Jarrett. So let's just go ahead and get on with it, ladies and gentlemen. Without any further ado, the man himself, Jeff Jarrett. Jeff, how are you doing?
How are we doing, guys? I appreciate you having me on. It's I guess that's what the business I'm in. You know, I've made a living talking, but I've also sort of mixed it up with some action every now and then. Now I'm just a full-time talker, I guess. But no, I appreciate you guys having me on. Looking forward to chatting all things. Obviously, you just referenced My World, so that's a whole new world for me. But you're right. If I don't have stories after 35 plus years and three generations, I'm in trouble. But now, am I speaking to Scrump or Stank or what are the names?
So I'm Scrump. Yeah. And then my co-host.
And I'm Stank.
You guys got it. Listen, should I call you Mr. Scrump and Mr. Stank? Because you need to properly introduce yourself to the chosen one, to the King of the Mountain. I'm kidding.
Mr. Stank is my dad. So,
yeah, see, well,
and I'm not going to go there where everybody else went. So that means your mom is Miss Stank.
Yes, that's correct. Yes.
Shame on you. Shame on you.
funny enough with that as well, too, because we're so used to we're talking with wrestlers, talking to people within the world of wrestling who sometimes they pick a nickname. You know, it's people know them by their actual name, but sometimes it's this. They land on a name. They say, I'm going to call myself this. And then 20 odd years go by and, you know, you're like, all right, yeah, we're still calling this person by that nickname, and with Dave and myself, I either refer to him as Dave or Stank, and it is sometimes when they're like, wait, so are you talking to Dave or is there three people on this or what's going on? But we'll keep
it. Well, so, I mean, speaking of names, like I just wanted to say, like when I was younger and I was kind of really getting into wrestling and kind of understanding it as like an art form. You know, I remember watching like WWF Superstars and seeing like a new character, Double J. And, you know, I remember thinking, what an awesome name, Double J, J-A-double-R, you know, J-E-double-F, J-A-double-R-E-double-T. I was like, how do you get a name so perfect like that? And like, you know, it just like lent to your character so well to, you know, you kind of had that wild kind of flamboyant outfit and the whole gimmick. What was it like when they show you like one, your outfit, which was pretty unique at the time, but just your character in general?
Well, Mr. Stank, I'll say this. You know, right when I first got to 1993, when I went full time with the WWF at that time, there would be some folks that, whether it's production or even, you know, fans that I was around that had no idea that my father wrestled promoted and my grandmother promoted and all that. They just thought, wow. And they would say, hey, that's not really your real name. Right. I go, no, that's really my name with two F's, two R's, two T's. You know, putting that all together and just to sort of, you know, dovetail off of that, I've said it often on my world, and me and Conrad have had conversations on there and off there, because sometimes he'll just start picking my brain where I have that conversation. You know, Vince McMahon is a lot of things, but one of the things that I think, you know, at the end of the day is that he gets something out of a talent that already exists. You know, the Undertaker, the only one guy could really do that Undertaker, because there's a deep, right, dark side in Mark Calloway or Stone Cold or you name it, in the Hulkamania run. I mean, we could go on and on and on and on and on about the different characters over the years, but Vince would find something that's already really existed, but man, he would know how to pull it out of somebody and shine a spotlight. And, you know, all that came together, and Vince, you know, seeing my God-given name and then knowing that I'm from Nashville and I love country music. And we just, you know, started from the seed there and continue to collaborate. And all these years later, Double J stuck, as we're talking about nicknames, Mr. Stank and Scrump.
Well, speaking of Vince, you know, like you said, there's a lot that's been said about him, and depending on what your relationship is with him at the time, you know, some people speak negatively about him, you know, when they're kind of on each other's bad side, but then oftentimes they'll come back around and say, well, a lot of times Vince was like a father figure to me. Or like almost in every instance, they say just what you said, he sees something that's innate in some of the great performers that maybe needed to be pushed out. And I mean, that's kind of like the hallmark of a great promoter. Now you're one of the few, you know, now currently that's seen both sides as a wrestler and as a promoter. What's it like being able to juggle, you know, the showbiz side and also having to deal with talents and managing egos and knowing what's best for business, what's best for the show? And, you know, just being in that position where sometimes you can be the villain, you know, backstage. But really what you're trying to do is put on the best product. Like, do you have like a special insight to maybe a lot of what Vince goes through?
Well, you know, it goes without saying, not to be repetitive, but, you know, I'm a third generation guy. So growing up in the industry and just being around it all the time, it's like, you know, whether you're born into the you know, if you've got uncles and dads and grandfather that's a lawyer or a banker or any type of sort of family business as you grow up in it, almost by osmosis, you have a leg up because you understand it through that way. But the thing that you understand the most is that, hey, what this profession is, it's literally what's put groceries on my table. And that's a great, you know, a lot of we've joked and said I was either blessed or cursed having a father that wrestled and promoted. But, you know, the wrestling industry, truth be known, has put groceries, to use that term, on my family's table for three generations. So born and raised in that environment and looking it through those eyes is that by default, you say, all right, how am I going to make the most money out of this? What makes the best business sense? And a lot of those decisions may seem, oh, that's the wrong decision, maybe for the night, but for the long term, that's the long play to stay in the business, to stay healthy, to stay not just surviving, but thriving. And so a lot of times decisions are made that maybe on the surface, maybe it's the right decision, maybe it's the wrong decision, but for the long play, it's absolutely the right decision. And those kind of things that unless you've been around a few years and understand the psychology of it, the business sense of it, the knowing that I have to make this decision to get me down to the fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth levels of decisions, because if I don't make that decision today, I never get there. And so, you know, that's something that, you know, Vince, and it's unbelievably remarkable to me to this day that, you know, it go Raw, the longest running episodic television in history. I mean, it beat Gunsmoke, but I mean, and when you say that, it's like different TV shows, and I guess 60 Minutes has, you know, a lot of seasons under their belt, but they're one day a week for a season. You know, we're 52 weeks a year. So when you really put it all into context and the amount of hours that Vince has personally produced, not sitting in an office knowing the show's going on, like that he's personally produced through the years. And even before, you know, when he worked for his father, he was the announcer. So he was a part of production there. Just the amount of hours and hours and hours that he has, and, you know, I don't have near that many, but, you know, my father and going to Memphis TV as a, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-old kid, and guys come to the curtain and they just beat the hell out of each other. and here they are looking at my old man and saying, how was that? It just puts a whole different perspective from you know, me being a teenager looking at it. They go, oh, this is all business. That this is 100% business, and it's about making money. So that was a long-winded answer, but it's a great question, because in the world we live in today with social media and everything being so transparent, I think it's a great point to discuss that for the night, it might not be the perfect decision, but for the long play, it absolutely is.
Well, and speaking about Vince having an eye for talent, dare I say you do as well, because again, like we mentioned, your history with TNA, and like if you look at the current landscape of WWE, there's a lot of guys that, you know, started out in Impact, you know, either had a cup of tea in there, but they're now, you know, the mainstays, your Bobby Roode, your AJ Styles, your R-Truths. Is there any part of you that sort of feels like the father figure, where, you know, you saw these people, that you clearly saw something in them, you know, you looked at a Samoa Joe and said, this is going to be the guy, and now seeing that you were right about that, like, is there any sort of validation in seeing them succeed, even to an extent with someone like a Jeremy Borash, you know, behind the scenes, who, you know, people rave about his work, and again, you were sort of the person who discovered these guys and were able to give them more of a mainstream audience.
Well, for every Jeremy Borash or AJ Styles or Samoa Joe, there's guys that didn't make it. And we have had those kind of conversations. I won't name names, but when I went back full-time up there in 2019, a number of people came up to me, and they were just super gracious and kind, and thanks for everything you've done. I'd never be here, blah, 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 blah. And I had a very candid, quick response, and I just tell them, that's not really true. That's not really accurate, because the cream always rises to the top. And I look at it as if, how lucky am I to have had the opportunity for a boy from North Georgia who was landscaping, who said, hey, I'm going to come up here every Wednesday, AJ Styles, or whatever, you know, however you slice and dice it. So it makes me feel good, you know, that the guys are so successful. But when I look back on that time frame and look at just how we were hitting on all cylinders and gelling, it was, from a professional point of view, just a fantastic era of my career. But then just recently on ad-free shows, we Conrad wanted to sit down with my father, who I believe is the last remaining territory promoter alive. And he sat him down and had some conversations. And when you hear my father talk about, from Jerry Lawler to the Road Warriors to Rock and Roll Express to Midnight Express, Jim Cornette, Jimmy Hart, and then on up to Stone Cold and The Undertaker and The Rock and all the guys that came through there, you know, my dad's territory is the one that gave them, I don't say their break, but gave them an opportunity to create and to refine and to get their career going. And so it's funny how, when I sort of look back, there's some parallels to that, that he gave a guys a lot of opportunity. That's opportunities were given to me when I started the started the business. And so I'm just glad that a lot of guys seized the opportunity and are the success they are today.
Well, one of those people, you know, that sort of seized the opportunity was Nick Aldis when he wrestled, I believe it was back in 2019 at All In, and you were actually there. You cornered him. You, before we were recording, you know, we were like, oh, have we met before? And I met you backstage at that show as, you know, being with Pro Wrestling Tees, we were running around, and, you know, All In sort of sprouted what was to become now AEW. And again, you've been someone who you've been around for years. So you've seen these companies, you know, pop up and sort of gain some momentum. Some of them fall by the wayside. Some of them are still going to this day, very much like, you know, with TNA, with Impact. Is it almost surreal for you to see like that this is still happening, that this is still a thing with WWE as big as it is, that there's still companies that manage to find, you know, this abundance of talent that for the moment isn't WWE ready or not ready to go to WWE, but that this is still happening? Because again, like, you've been around for plenty of the wrestling boom periods, and it almost feels as if we're in the midst of one right now.
Well, when you sort of look at, and look, TNA is coming up on it. It's hard for me to believe, but it's coming up on its 20-year anniversary, for one thing. Damn, that makes me feel old, Stan. but it's look, and here's another sort of a unique perspective that I'm blessed with, is that growing up in Nashville, you know, in the, we'll say, 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s and a little bit past that, there were four or five labels. And if you want to say labels, there were four or five WWEs. But now, the way entertainment is, there's so many independent labels and so many opportunities. That's how I view professional wrestling. I believe we are just scratching the surface of seeing multiple brands. I mean, God bless the Khan family. You know, when a family enters this business with hundreds of millions of dollars, it radically changes the climate. And what an opportunity that's been given to so many folks. And there, a lot of folks have seized the opportunity. And so I think it's very healthy. I think there's going to be, you know, continue to be more. I think it's going to be real interesting just to see how things, but the model is changing right before our very eyes. You know, it went from, I don't have to tell you guys, but went from a live event business in the territory days to closed circuit and pay-per-view and then monthly pay-per-view. And now we're getting into streaming and WWE Network's on Peacock, and just the evolution of things continues to go at a breakneck speed. I'm pretty excited to see where it's going, but I just think there's opportunities. And, you know, years ago, yes, there was wrestling in Japan and Germany and some in the UK, and obviously Mexico goes back, you know, a lot of years. But now the way technology is, there's not a country in the world that isn't aware of professional wrestling. And with that awareness comes opportunity. So I've always been very bullish on the international market. And I think there's a lot of great things to come in the days to come in international professional wrestling. But in our, in our wonderful world, you'd be sitting in your house in Chicago and view stuff from Mumbai or Munich or wherever, Middle East, it doesn't matter. So it's going to be a lot of fun in the months and years to come.
No, definitely.
Jeff, I wanted to ask you real quick, and I know that on your own show, My World with Jeff Jarrett, you've talked about this a little bit, but to me, like one of the more shocking moments in wrestling was Bash at the Beach 2000. And I know you've talked about it with other people and stuff. But that was when you came out, Vince Russo tells you lay down and Hulk Hogan pins you. And everyone made like a really big deal about that. That was kind of when wrestling had this real emphasis on this is real backstage. You know, there is a show, but this is real. Could you tell us a little bit about how you felt in that moment? I know you had to be in a really tough spot. Like you're between a rock and a hard place and of course, coming from the promoter background, you got to do what's best for the company, but you're also a performer and you're representing in a different way. What were some of the conflicting feelings you were having during, you know, before, during, and after that event happened at Bash at the Beach?
And, you know, we do an entire episode on My World and all my socials, and there's actually a website, everything. If you go on, you know, whether it's my website or socials, it's realjeffjarrett.com, and you can go there and find this episode. But, you know, again, I learned at an early age, you know, when I show up to an arena, what cap am I really playing? What cap am I really wearing? Right. And obviously at WCW, I was a talent. Now, the promoter in me was disgusted. The human being in me was disgusted. The talent in me was disgusted. But, you know, it's also I knew my parameters. I was there as a soldier to do what I was told. And why put myself out and down a sword that there's no way I can do anything about? I did what I was told, and that was, you know, the reality of the situation. But here we are still talking about it 20 years later, which is in a lot of ways a head scratcher to me, because it was such, in my opinion, a real, just a real stain, a blemish on the industry. But it makes for good news. But, you know, when people hear the story today, and I've gotten the feedback off of that for folks who have heard that episode, and it's almost like an overwhelming when we get into discussion, and I tell the folks, I said, you have to kind of imagine that those were pre-Twitter, pre-Instagram, YouTube. It was really a word of mouth, and so – Yeah, there was the Mean Gene hotlines, but it was so pre-social media days in so many ways that it was really a unique time in the industry because, someone that followed wrestling and WCW and WWF and knew it was scripted and knew all that, they still went, what the hell was that? When they absolutely knew it was scripted, but it raised so many questions, like the Arquette winning the title. Those kind of things. Mm-hmm. It's like, what? So anyway, we're still talking about that stuff, and I'm glad we are because it's certainly my world, my podcast is just, it's a whole new world for me to venture into. Here I am talking to you guys on your podcast. I don't have to tell you guys you're in the podcast game, but it's kind of amazing how podcasting is now a form of entertainment, and it's highly, lots of revenue created, lots of news created out of it. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, speaking of different forms of entertainment, while we're still in the midst of it, the pandemic itself, I know one of the things at the beginning of the pandemic that a lot of people were doing, aside from, your podcast, YouTube's, is they were catching up on television, because the one thing that we all have an abundance of are things to watch. And the thing we don't have an abundance of is time to actually watch it, as we're all busy with family, work, everything that may be. So at any point, during the pandemic, was there like a TV show or something that, you and the wife for years now have been saying, oh, you know what, we should catch up on that show. We should catch up on that show. We should finally watch that movie that you guys finally got to, the chance to sit down and watch that. Because, here at the PWT cast, one of the things that Dave and I, we do enjoy talking as much as wrestling, is other forms of entertainment as far as movies and TV shows. So during the pandemic, was that something where, you and the wife finally got to sit down and go, oh, okay, now let's watch, I don't know, let's go through The Sopranos now that we have, all the time in the world?
So Dutch Mantel still wants to kick my ass because I've never watched an episode of The Sopranos. It's one of his favorite shows of all time. And no, guys, I have not watched The Godfather yet, which shame on me. But I will say this, during the pandemic, I watched Tiger King every episode, guys. I am a sports junkie. I watch anything. Basketball is my favorite, but I still watch sports. And as you just, alluded to, it was no sports on there for a while, and we were home. And so I did a lot of reading and working out, but I did watch Ozark and all kinds. I called up some on several series that, Scientology. My wife Karen, she is a TV junkie, so we watched all kinds of things. But the one thing that, and I watched each episode twice, or I went through the series twice, but when I watched, and this is, and I've told this story multiple times, but it relates directly to podcasting. When I watched The Last Dance with Michael Jordan, yes, I'm a big Bulls fan and a Michael Jordan fan, and you guys are Chicago and everything that goes with it. But if you were to erase all that and just land here from Mars and sit down and watch that documentary, it was so compelling. And I've used the word mesmerizing. Of course, I lived through the 90s and knew that Rodman skipped practice to come to Nitro. And so, but I lived all that. And again, I'm a basketball fan, but the one multiple times watching those 10-part series, I would sit there and a light bulb, literally, proverbially or however you want to say, the light bulb went off in my head and I go, that's podcasting. He is retelling a story with unbelievable emotion, with a real sense of he's in the moment, going back 20 years ago, the greatest basketball player. Sorry, LeBron fans, the greatest basketball player who ever lived. But literally, that really went, oh, my God. And so as things went and this new year rolled around and Conrad was wanting to do business in other ways, and we talk championship belts, and he's a belt collector, but he recycled the wagons because he's tried to get into the podcast for multiple years. But I had a new fresh take on it, and when we got into those conversations, and obviously he talked about the business component and everything that goes with it, but The Last Dance it gave me almost proof of concept on how a podcast, because wrestling fans, like we just talked, you guys, and I'm not saying you're the diehard wrestling fans, but the audience wants to know, okay, what really happened when you arrived at the building, and how did that go down? And thank God I've got some good recall, because I remember quirky things about these stories and where I was standing and where Vince was standing, or Hulk, or what room I was in. I could take you to these arenas, and you know where I hit Beetlejuice guys, I could walk you right to the spot in that old building if I could. But anyway, all kinds of things like that. But yeah, good question.
Well, Jeff, I just want to say, as we're kind of winding down, I do think that that's kind of part of like the wrestling boom that we're seeing now, is seeing people that have gone through it, and we're not hearing second, third hand through like a dirt sheet, you know, what possibly happened. We're getting people that have been woven into the fabric of this business, and, you know, truly legendary people telling their stories straight from the horse's mouth. And it's different than, you know, when we were seeing a lot of shoot videos that sometimes, you know, you'd see people airing their dirty laundry because of sour grapes or whatever, or they needed a quick payout. This is really something that, like, we get to see guys like you, you know, having a show like My World with Jeff Jarrett, and you're telling the stories that built, you know, your entire legacy, and we're hearing it from you, and it's coming from a very real place. And I'm just great that we have something like this, because, you know, normally you could get like a question and answer session at a con or something, but, you know, you only have like 200 people there that heard it in the room. But I think what you're doing with this show is great. And it's really great that we're starting to get more of this stuff out, because I think it only helps fans. It helps people that want to be wrestlers get like a little bit of perspective that they wouldn't have got otherwise.
Well, and, you know, me and Conrad have had those conversations, and I've told him, yes, it's my story. It's my life, but also it's kind of amazing that the ad-free team, if you go to adfreeshows.com, you can get My World early and ad-free and a bunch of other bonus content. Guys, I got my plug in, but no, I'm kidding, but I'm not kidding, but no, that being said, the one thing that me, you know, look, I've been a performer for 35 plus years, but when I do the podcast and the research team goes back and look, I remember a lot, but not everything. But when I dive into an episode and rack my brain, and I'll write myself notes and just think things through. And sometimes obviously the years, like, was that 97 or 96? And 'cause I don't want to say the wrong year. And then the Twitter police get me, and then it just turns into a non-story, but really not talking about the podcast, as Jeff said, 96, and it was really 98. One of those deals. But anyhow, I really step up to the plate, and I tell Conrad, and I'm vehement about it, is that if somebody's going to invest 2 hours, 3 hours, 90 minutes into listening to this story, I just feel it is absolutely my responsibility. Not Conrad's. Conrad is a host of six others. He runs a mortgage industry. And look, I've got a lot of things going on in my life, but if I'm going to sit down and do a podcast, I want to knock it out of the park each and every time. Do I take it sometimes too serious? Maybe, maybe not. But with that being said, I appreciate you saying that, because hearing it through, you guys have your own podcast, but, you know, you're right. But I'm flipping the switch. Michael Jordan, this wasn't like a Bulls ball boy or Bulls assistant coach, or this wasn't a scout or even a news reporter in Chicago who worked the Chicago Bulls beat. This is the man himself that sat down with a laptop in his hand, and I could not turn away from it. I was just, you know, and Karen would laugh at me because I'm not a binger. I wouldn't watch all 10 episodes. I wanted to watch an episode and walk away and think about it. She's like, dude, you are weird. But no, anyway, yeah, so I appreciate you saying that, because I view it just like I'm a fan and sat down and watched Jordan. I want people, if they're going to invest in My World and sit down and listen to it, I'm going to step up to the plate and do my very best recall and tell the story the best I can.
I mean, definitely some comparisons could be made to Jordan and yourself, because you're both a great, as far as my opinion goes, as far as Scrum's opinion goes, you two guys do the very best to ever do it. And I love that you're as much of a Bulls fan as you are, because Dave or Stank over here, he himself, giant Bulls fan, most recently at the United Center show, got to have his artwork displayed, you know, on the Titantrons over at the United Center, which Again,
I love it.
Someone being as big of a fool's man as that. Of course, Jeff, we'll wind it down here. We thank you for the time that you gave us. Of course, if people want to hear more about you, they can go listen to My World with Jeff Jarrett. I personally would recommend the SummerSlam episodes. You did two real good ones back to back. I believe it was 98 and 99 SummerSlams that were two of the ones that I personally like. And I know actually your podcast is up for an award.
It is. Who would have thunk it, guys? No. I'm not sure when the results come out, but the voting is closed. But yeah, best new podcast in all genres, just not wrestling. Yeah, I was shocked. Conrad sent me the link well past my bedtime, I'll say that. And when I looked at it, because I heard my phone calls, I was shocked, but very humbling. But man, the whole ad-free team and Conrad and a lot of fun. So whether we win or not, it was an incredible honor because I think there's, I don't know, I just did that convention podcast movement. We were panel speakers and I was 3 months into my career and they still asked me to do it, which is cool. But lots of new podcasts that come out every day. I think there's over 8 million active podcasts. It's some kind of crazy number. So to get nominated as best new podcast of 2021, it was a great honor to have.
And if people want to find more, more about you, want to go follow you on social media, things like that, where can they go?
I make it super simple. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and website, Real Jeff Jarrett. That's Real, R-E-A-L. And then I'll let you stank spell Jeff Jarrett if you take us out here, my friend.
Double J, J-E-F-F-J-A-R-R-E-T.
There we go. You got it, my friend.
Jeff, thank
guys,
you for
I really had a lot of fun today. I had a lot of fun. Appreciate having me on, and hope we can do it again someday.